You've got to invest in the things that you enjoy doing and that you're good at. My late pastor said it the other day. He said, go where the fire is, especially whilst you're young. What are those things that get you excited? What are those things that get you going? What are those things that you can do and lose track of time? Invest in those things.
Welcome to the Valuable Podcast, where there is value in every conversation. I'm your host, Victor Sasanya, and today I am joined with Carl Canardi, motivational speaker and founder of 2 to 3 Degrees. This episode is deep. We talked about not only how to become a better speaker, but how to become a better person in life through the journey of self-development. First things first, shout out Zencaster, who is the sponsor of this episode and season 2 of the Valuable Podcast. Zencaster is an all-in-one podcasting platform, which I've personally used from day one to record my podcast. So there's no lies told. I know this platform. I record both quality audio and HD video online using Zencaster. So if you want to start a podcast, then you can too, with 30% off your first 3 months. So go to zen.ai/valuable1 and use my promo code valuable1. Alternatively, just click the link in the description below, then apply the code valuable1. Zencaster has over 10,000 podcasters like myself in the creator network, and they are successfully matching brands and companies with podcasters every day. So even if you're a brand interested in sponsoring this show or running a podcast ads to grow your business, go to zen.ai/valuable1 and fill out the contact information so Zencaster can help you bring your business dreams to life. Without further ado, let's get straight into this episode. Thank you for joining me on the Valuable Podcast. Do you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Yes, it's a pleasure. Super, super pleasure to be here, man. A very proud moment. Name is Carl Canardi, motivational speaker, CEO and co-founder of 2 to 3 Degrees. And this wonderful young man and I have been friends for a little while now. So I'm super proud to be on your podcast, man.
No, I really appreciate it. You say friends, but I actually started out sort of admiring you. And I'm sure I told you the story about watching your Instagram videos. Like, this is, you're the real deal. I have to just tell the listeners that from the very start. In the football cages, where there's no nets, basketball courts, talking about the wolf analogy, right? The wolf at the top is not as hungry as the wolf that's climbing.
Hey, you remember me, I tell you, yeah, you're rule day one, you know.
listen, I've been watching, and to be honest, I say that because it impacted me. I think those are the little things that you don't forget. When I was in secondary school at this time, so probably year 10, like, just picked my GCSEs, and that motivation I was drawing from Instagram was just a random person, where you're really talking about this analogy and you're talking about not just obviously hard work, but so many different things. And I think you used to post daily, if I'm correctly, or frequent enough to get me motivated. So talk to me a bit about that, because you just label yourself as a motivational speaker, but is that something you always wanted to be? Is that something you just, I don't know, you just fell into?
Daily posting, boy. That was the energy those days. That was the energy. I need to get back to that. Where did it come from? Is it, you know what's funny? On Saturday, I went to go and watch my old football team play. I used to play for Dulwich Hamlet Football Club. Great. If anyone from Southeast London, especially from Peckham, they might know. And so growing up, I didn't even know what a motivational speaker was. I always knew that I wanted to kick ball. Every young black boy from ends always wanted to kick ball. But one thing I do recognize, and I think it's Steve Jobs who says that, like, you can only ever connect the dots looking backwards. One thing I do recognize is that even when I was playing football, I was always somebody who wanted to serve, inspire, and encourage others. That was always, even when I was like not getting into the team, which was not very often, but even when I weren't getting into the team, I'll be the one on the sidelines, making sure people had water, encouraging the team. We'll be on the coach on the way back. If we had lost the game, again, which didn't happen very often, if we had lost the game, I'll be the one when the coach is dead silent. Don't worry, lads, like, we can do it again next time. So it's like, even though my eyes weren't on being a motivational speaker and I didn't even know what that was, yeah, I was always doing it and I was always living it. I remember being like 12 years old and coming home from church one day and saying to my mum, I don't know what it is, but I want to do what I saw the priest doing today. I want to stand at the front of the church and be able to share messages. It was only as I got a bit older and I got introduced to the likes of like Eric Thomas and I went through uni and I failed my A-levels miserably. I think that journey really shifted things. and got me to really start, noticing that I wanted to do something more than just exist or just get a normal job title. Actually, I wanted to pour into other people, lead other people, and support other people.
No, that's powerful. And so let's bring it back. So before you were getting into speaking, you said you were playing football, you failed your A-levels. Is there a correlation to that? Was that because you were busy doing, pro sport, or what was it?
I wish I was pro boy. Nah, not quite pro. I played to a semi-pro standard, which did take a lot of time, to be fair. So I remember I was in secondary school when I got into the football team and we started playing for Fisher Athletic. That took a lot of time and energy. And I was one of those kids. I remember being in year 7 and I was put on a gifted and talented course. So I was always okay when it came to books. I wasn't like the top of the class, but I'd get into the top set. Or like I wasn't the most gifted person, but I'd be in and around, like I'd be a prefect, all of those type of things. But I feel like God does this thing where he tries to poke you and get you to realize that if you don't start using what was planted inside of you, you're going to lose it. So my GCSEs, I did my GCSEs and I got 1A, 3Bs and 6Cs. And that was the first poke where it was like the Lord was saying, look, like, wake up, you could do a lot better. Because my predicted grades versus what I actually got was a huge gap. But I kind of weaseled my way out of that one. Went to sixth form. I went to a really, really good sixth form, but I only really got into that sixth form because the football team, Dulwich Hamlet at the time, had like a partnership with that sixth form. And the sixth form was called Haberdasher Asks Hatcham. In New Cross. So I went to Haberdasher's and this is a sixth form where people are like going to Oxford, going to Cambridge. And I remember I was more concerned with like, sitting next to the prettiest girl when I got into the class or like wearing my tracksuit because I played for the football team than I was on my books. And I'd never forget that day when I opened up my A-level results, man. My results were so bad that they could spell the word fudge. I was like, bad, man. That's like F-U-D.
Oh, wow.
Tell the story all the time, but like, it was so, so bad. And then I think the real life changing moment happened later on when I got home. I remember my mum standing at the top of the stairs and she had like tears in her eyes and that touched me, but that still wasn't enough. A friend of mine called me a bit later on and when they rang me, they asked me what I got. I told them what I got and I told them that I had managed to get a place in university through clearing. I asked him what he got. He said he got like an A star and a B. I was like, well done. And there was an awkward silence on the phone. And then eventually he was like, rah boy, today really shows who put in that work. I was like, whoa, that's supposed to be my friend. And it was almost as if I had like a bit of an out of body experience where I knew that that was what I deserved, but I wasn't willing to admit it because I wasn't putting in the work. I wasn't doing my revision, et cetera, et cetera. And that was kind of that the day that I realized that like in life, you're only ever going to get out what you're willing to put in and not a penny more. You have got to, your life is literally going to be a direct printout of the work that you do, the energy and the faith that you have. But I had to learn the hard way. So I went from obviously failing my A-levels miserably to then getting a first-class degree in international relations and politics and really shifting things around. That was a really, really long way of answering that question.
No. I think it's quite inspirational, just to say the least. And I can see that through the way you're speaking, through the way you're even narrating that story. And you must have picked up this skill of storytelling like on your journey. So like I said, you started off what, just picking up your phone, going out, recording videos on the street. Right. And we'll get into it, what you do now, a bit more different, a bit more structured, etc. But not at all. Like I said, I was a fan from day one. But I'm just intrigued to know where you sort of developed your skills. Like, so you talked about, formal education, but was there education, outside of that formal sort of setting where you develop the skills to speak or develop the skills to storytell?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I think it's both informal and formal. So the informal bits, like I mentioned, from a very young age, there was a thing that used to happen at church where they'd get a young person to read out their announcements. And every time I got chosen, I was super, super excited. So like things like that, speaking at church or speaking in the local youth club or things of that nature. Then I remember the first time when I finished uni, my university invited us back, a couple of us, to share our experience of doing a placement year. And I remember when I was preparing to do that talk, there was a moment where I said to myself, I can do this talk normally, or I can prepare this in a way where the people in the crowd have the most incredible experience ever and they leave with shed loads of value. And I remember like changing the way that I prepared that specific talk, and that really changed the way that I looked at public speaking. Because when I put in a little bit more effort, what started to happen is I started to think about how can I tell a story, and then how can I use things like the rule of three. So I remember I gave them like three pieces of advice that would help you make the most of your placement year. And then I took a camera and I got them to record it. And that was the first time that I kind of realized that, you know, whenever you get an opportunity to speak or to train other people, you can either look at it as an opportunity or you can look at it as a task. And for those people who look at it as a task, it almost becomes a bit like a chore. Like when your mom asks you to go and do the washing up, you're just doing it because you were told to. But when people start to look at things as an opportunity, what you do is you go above and beyond in making it the most incredible experience ever. And that was like my first taste of that. And that just kind of happened, I think, because I started listening to motivational speakers. I started taking in certain content. And so that principle of going above and beyond, I tried to do that with that talk. What then kind of happened is I started doing a lot more volunteering. So I was a Safer London ambassador, helping bridge the gap between the young people in my local community and the Metropolitan Police. And that really came because a friend of mine lost his life due to gun crime, Rio McFarlane, in 2010. And when that happened, that really shifted my idea of what I felt like I was here to do. I felt like there was more to do than just, again, existing. So I went from Safer London, then I was a trustee for the British Youth Council. Then I was the chair of the Spirit of 2012 Trust. And this started to involve in a lot more public speaking opportunities. And so I think that's where that birth and that desire started to come from. And then it really spiraled into me creating content. And I remember walking past the chicken and chip shop in near my mum's house. And one day I was saying to myself, why am I waiting for somebody to ask me to come and speak? If I really want to inspire people, I've got a phone. Yeah. And I think I just jumped on Twitter and I did like a video of like 101, like I think at that moment you could only do like 130 seconds. So I did a video just inspiring people walking past the chicken and chip shop. And then it was like, okay, cool. Like it got a lot of reception. I was like, why don't I just do this every day? Why am I waiting for somebody to give me an opportunity? I can just create it. Yeah, and that's really where it kicked off from.
Wow. Wow, no, that's really good. And the fact that you ended up creating your own opportunities, but at first you were given the opportunity to go and speak about your placement. Mm. So to me, it sounds like you went through that sort of process, and you talked about volunteering as well. I want to quickly touch on that because I think in the generation that we live in right now, volunteering is, I don't know, it's not as attractive as probably it seems before. Maybe because there's more opportunities that are paid. Even on LinkedIn, right, we see some of these posts that go viral saying, oh, internships or work experience should only be paid, like poor on you employer for not paying someone. And it really, like, volunteering is just seen as, I don't know, what's your take on that? Do you think, or what, in fact, not that, what has volunteering, the impact, what's it had on you? How was your experience, and would you recommend that for young people today?
Yeah, man, volunteering shifted everything. Volunteering really shifted everything. So I grew up in a community where I was losing friends to gun crime. There's people that I went to school with. Someone actually video called me the other day. Someone called me the other day and he was like, oh, yo, video call me. I was like, okay, cool. So I video called him back. And the person who answered the phone was somebody I went to school with, but he had just come out of prison for 10 years. And it's like, that's the type of environment that I grew up around. Volunteering allowed me to get access to a whole new world, because what happened is when I'm volunteering at 16 years old with the Safer London Foundation, for example, first of all, I'm going into office buildings. That alone was unheard of, because obviously if I'm getting on a bus every day and going to Peckham or going to school, that's not something you're used to. I'm now also engaging in environments and with people that I wouldn't usually engage with. People that are starting to say to me, oh, do you know that this career is an option or that career is an option? And it sounds like very basic things, but also the other thing that I noticed is when I started volunteering, I started going to different parts of London. So at first, I would only ever leave my house to go into inner London. And if I was going further out, it's probably because I was playing football. But when I started volunteering, I would leave my house and go in the opposite direction. So instead of going to Old Kent Road or Peckham, I would all of a sudden start going to Borough. and going across the bridge to London Bridge. And then I started finding out about Cheapside and the Business District and all of these places. So it just naturally, at a very basic level, it started to shift my perspective of what the world had to offer. Now, what really, really shifted things is when I did my placement year, I actually volunteered and I had to do a placement where it was unpaid. And that only really happened because I was looking for a placement for my whole of my second year. And I couldn't get one. Like, everyone was rejecting me. And it got to the point where me and my brethren, we started a business and we tried to do a placement for ourselves.
And really?
I was in the uni. I was like, oh, I found this placement. And they were like, who's it with? I was like, oh, K&S. I think our business was called like K&S something, something. And they were like, is that your business? I was like, yeah. They were like, no, you can't do a placement for yourself. So I was like, damn. And then one opportunity came up and it was unpaid. And it was only initially for 3 months. And it was like doing this project, and the project ended up being a project that we were doing in Glasgow. But it's so mad. And this is why I think, especially for your generation, and your question is so important. I think in life, what's more important than how much money are they going to pay me? But the bigger question is, who am I going to become? So what happened is this organization that only had 3 staff members brought me on as an intern. But what happened is I now got access to delivering my own project in Glasgow as an intern. There are paid internships where you wouldn't get the opportunity to do that. You wouldn't be the person who has to design the content, recruit the people, liaise with the project partners in a whole different country. And I got access to this whole new world and I got thrown into the deep end. But the craziest thing is about it is that project started off in Glasgow. That Glasgow project then became a project that I did in Trinidad and Tobago. That then became project I did in Uganda, that then became a project that I did in Sri Lanka. And if I had not said yes to that one volunteering opportunity, what then became a paid gig in all of those other countries wouldn't have happened. So I think there's something there about understanding the principle of not necessarily just money first, but yeah, like the name of the podcast, value first.
No, that's so good. And just quickly for context, so what sector or industry was the organization you were working in?
Yeah, so like I said, I studied international relations and politics, and the thing I really wanted to do was marry my passion for sport with my passion for international relations. So at the time, I really wanted to work for FIFA. So I wanted to use sport as a tool for diplomacy between different countries. So I initially did my internship with the Commonwealth Youth Exchange Council. And then that developed into a paid role with the Commonwealth Secretariat. And I was like a program officer where I was delivering projects to do with like the Commonwealth Advisory Body on Sport, the Commonwealth Youth Forum in Sri Lanka, and different things like that. So it was basically international relations. And the thing that made that so amazing, I remember going back in final year and sitting an exam, and the example that I was using in my exam was of a conference that I actually organized. So it was like, I wasn't now just talking about something I had read in theory. I was now talking about something that I lived in real life.
Wow. It sounds to me you tie in your passions with like your work, like what you do. You're very much intentional, very much purposeful. Because if everybody was rejecting you, you could have just said, oh, listen, I'll take anything, right? You wanted to first placement in your own company. So, but you still managed to get something within the field that you were studying, but within the field that you actually had something to do with. And I just want to say as well, it must have had like a impact on sort of like your ego or your pride, right? Because you're going now for something unpaid. I'm sure there's some peers that you had were getting paid internships. Nowadays, you don't need to be on LinkedIn for 3 seconds. And I'm not taking shots at LinkedIn at all because I love LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn. But I'm just saying that it's very good to see, oh, I've just gotten this internship, gotten this placement. We're talking big banks, law firms. And I just get the feeling that some people see that. And it's weird. Someone actually, this is a true story. So someone very close to me actually said, oh, LinkedIn is like toxic positivity.
Yeah, I hear that.
And I said, wait, what? I've never heard that term before. They're like, yeah, because they don't really use it. So they say when they go on it, they just feel like, you know, they feel terrible. Ah, okay, you've got this. But it seems so. And I don't even know what to think of it, because I'm thinking, yeah, we should celebrate people who's putting the work and they're celebrating. But if one doesn't, or if they're not assured of the value that they possess, the value that they can provide, as well as where they're getting physical rejections, and it's even taken a further hit and dent on sort of their confidence. Like, where do we go from there? How does someone now think, okay, yes, I'm not like everybody else, I don't have really good results to post now. I'm not getting the paid jobs, the paid internships, the paid work experience. But my ego is a bit high to take on paid work or you know, volunteering. So, like, what would you sort of advise then?
The reason why the unpaid part didn't bother me so much was because, I guess, the rationale behind doing a placement year was two reasons. Number one, I wanted to make sure that before I entered the labor market, I had genuine experience in the thing that I wanted to do. Because I was thinking long term. I was thinking, I always remember I had this vision of like a long, long road. And on that road, there's loads of graduates and everyone's got their cap and gown and everyone's like, yeah, me, pick me, pick me, pick me. And then I thought to myself, if everybody's going to be finishing, what is going to make me different? What's going to make me stand out? So with that vision, my whole thing was, forget, money would be great. But what was more important was I actually needed to stand out. And to be able to stand out, I needed some real life experience. And not just any experience. I needed something that was fit to me becoming the type of person that I wanted to be. So I think because that principle was above just the paycheck, what happened was the opportunity that I attracted ended up fitting that. So I guess what I'd say to anyone out there who's just like, yeah, no, I'm not in a position to have a unpaid. I had to do that work experience part-time and also work in retail at the same time. And so it was like, I basically had to hustle. And it was funny because I had friends during my placement year who were in their final year. People would be saying, yo, come out and party, come and do this. Or people who are having paid work experience and will be wearing their fancy suit and going to Canary Wharf. And I was slugging in retail and hating it. But what I knew deep down inside was that who I was becoming as a result of doing that work experience was far more important than just the paycheck. And I might not have knew it in its entirety at the time, but I was like, I valued the experience that I was getting. So value experience over the paycheck. Because in the long run, you need to play the long game. And even if I do a 20K, 25K, 30K internship for this year, it's only going to be for 1 year. So the question is, in the 365 days that you've got, yes, try and make as much money as possible. Brilliant. But try and make sure that the value of who you become in that 365 days is way more important than the paycheck that you earn. Because in the long run, that work experience has now led to me running a business that turns over X amount. But it all spirals, isn't it? But you can't connect those dots in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really good. And so fast tracking, do you think, or should I say the man you are now, how would you compare it to yourself back in the times at university? Because what you do now is you actually lead a company, we'll get into it, called 2 to 3 Degrees. And not only you lead a company, you lead people. And I think that's one of the most important things, because I posted this the other day, behind every great organization or company are great people. So you must do a phenomenal job in terms of leading the people. And I'm not sure the listeners know, you only started off, you know, with you, your co-founder, 2, 4, 6, 8, 12. I'm not sure how big now. So talk to me about 2 to 3 Degrees. How do you come to start that business and what's the impact it's having on young people today?
Yeah, man. I'm really blessed to run a business that I not only love, but that I'm super, super proud of. So 2 to 3 Degrees essentially delivers inspirational workshops and training to young people up and down the country. And the reason why we exist is because there are young people leaving the education system with the capacity to memorize Shakespeare or Pythagoras' theorem. But a lot of those skills become redundant the minute you leave the school gates. So what's actually really important is learning how to deal with failure, how to build your confidence and self-esteem, how to communicate in an environment where there are professionals and you haven't necessarily been in that environment before. So we deliver dynamic, fun, engaging, activity-based learning to help take young people on that journey of understanding, who am I? or understanding how failure is not a permanent scar, but it's a stepping stone to success. Understanding how to master communication, both one-to-one, in a group, and when you're public speaking. And we've been going for 6 years, worked with over 6,000 young people across education, community, and sport. And yeah, it's been a huge blessing, man. We've got some flagship programs like the Mastering My Future program, that takes young people on a journey of inspirational workshops, mentoring, and work experience in Westminster, where we've worked with over 500 young people. Or we've got the Redesign Camden program in Landsec, where we work in partnership with Landsec, the UK's largest commercial property owner. So now I'm just flexing. But ultimately, the purpose behind 2 to 3 Degrees is really to provide, yeah, value and inspiration to those young people who need it most, between the ages of like 14 to 25.
Yeah, and I think I'll just quickly, because you need to flex it, because I've been on those programs and I've engaged with it. The one especially, I think this was profound. Correct me if I'm wrong, but during COVID, when COVID-19 first came around, 2020, and even up until 2021, and now, like, the growth of the company was just sort of like skyrocket. The way you took advantage, not even took advantage, like you saw that the pandemic was basically, you know, it's a pandemic, right? So a lot of people are confused, there's uncertainty, people are, you know, immersed with fear, and you've now brought that inspiration, you've brought that motivation, not even motivation, strategy, giving people practical tips, tools, how can I be made useful, valuable in such a time like this? And when you talked about it, that people, and I think it was just, wow, my head was like, people learn Pythagoras theorem, all these different quotes, how to analyze a poem, not saying those skills are redundant, but if they do leave school, the likelihood, the chance of them using that again is very low. And this is a blog that I actually posted talking about your value, and because I study economics, we talk about, I'm studying labor economics, and there's a theory called human capital theory, right? Yeah. In the sense that we're meant to go to school, gain education, become more productive, and it should translate to a higher wage.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing now is the UK is falling behind with product. We don't have productive workers. and maybe partly that's because some of the skills that we're learning are not actually that useful. And the things that we should be learning, such as 2 to 3 degrees is providing, there's not enough of. So I really like the fact, I just wanted to big you up, I really like the fact that you are providing that. But where did it start? I'm sure it didn't start with you impacting 600 you know, people running all of these different sort of courses. What was the starting point? Because I'm sure I've personally came to you and said, hey, I want to speak at schools, can you give me some advice? I've came to you saying I want to impact, and I promise you there's so many more people that want to know this. They're messaging me, and I'm like, oh no, you should message Carl, because I'm messaging Carl. So if someone's listening, they want to create that impact, and how do they even start? Like,
I think it starts, like I said in the beginning, yeah, everything is like connected. So everything that I was even talking about in terms of what I was doing at church and volunteering, all of those things spiral into building your story. So I think the first place to start is, and it doesn't matter how old you are, but I posted it the other day. I said, you've got to invest in the things that you enjoy doing and that you're good at. My late pastor said it the other day. He said, go where the fire is, especially whilst you're young. What are those things that get you excited? What are those things that get you going? What are those things that you can do and lose track of time? Invest in those things. And I think what naturally happened is me and Aziz, my business partner, we went to uni together. We both studied IR and politics, like I mentioned. And we really, because we were both quite hungry to learn and to grow, and we were the both, you could almost call us a bit sneaky. We would be the ones that would turn up at 9 a.m. and want to sit at the front of the class. But I think it's because of what we had experienced in our A-levels, we were like, if I've tasted failure, I don't want to taste that again. So how can I get on job in my degree? And what happened is like that friendship really started to build until we got to a day where we realized when we came out of uni, we were getting access to loads of opportunities, whether it was public speaking, volunteering, our careers. I was working for the Commonwealth doing all these projects. Aziz was working for the Citizens Advice Bureau, then the Mayor of London. And we were like, you know what? I don't necessarily think we are special. I just think there are some common ingredients that we have had access to that a lot of our friends and peers haven't. And then one day we were having a gassed conversation and we were like, oh, what are we going to do with all this energy, man? We need to give it to the world. And we were like, oh, why don't we write a book? And we're like, no, let's start a business. And literally, because we knew that our gripe was the education system was failing young people, one day we said, let's start a business. The next day, we WhatsApped every single teacher in our WhatsApp and said, yo, I'm doing this thing. Can I come and start a workshop? Can I come and do a workshop? Can I come and do a workshop? One of my friends happened to be a teacher in a school and she said, you know what? We've got an enrichment day coming up. And I think our first booking was like £1,800, a whole, like it started off with a motivational assembly and then a whole series of workshops. And so what happened is we got the booking and now we had to then figure out what the content and the workshop was actually going to be. And that speaks to a principle that's like, you can't wait for everything to be perfect before you move. Sometimes you've got to go with the momentum. Say, look, this is what I'm doing. Can I get it done? I think it's the Richard Branson quote that says, first, like, bite off more than you can chew and then figure out how to swallow it afterwards. And sometimes it's a bit scary. And for those people who are like really pragmatic and logical and the spreadsheet masters, they'll be like, no, you got to have a plan. You got to have this. That's great. And that's how some people work. Not for me. You've also got to listen to the type of person that you are. If you're a little bit of a maverick, there's a reason why God made you like that. Use that. That means you've got a larger risk appetite. Use that to go and create opportunities, to go and explore new horizons, to go and create new adventures. Because that one workshop meant that we were forced to then get creative, get the flip chart paper out, create the content, and then that spiraled into another school, and then another school, and then another program. So yeah, that's essentially how it started, man. There wasn't anything too complicated to it. It was, what do we want to do, and who's going to help us do it? What's the quickest way we can get there?
No, you say it's not complicated, but I promise you it can be complicated in terms of implementation. Because I think when I asked you, so similar story to myself, I was just burning with passion, and I still to an extent am, that I believe that it's just common ingredients. Like you said, if some people knew in from an early age, whether they're 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, just some of the traits, some of the self-development, some of the inspirational sort of words they need to hear. And I feel like if you're in school, and this is what one of the teachers said to me when I went to Woolwich Poly in Southeast, and one of the teachers said to me, we're so happy you're here because they won't listen to our voices anymore. Like we tell them the same thing, right? And just them hearing the information from someone who's coming in external is a big thing. But I think I wanted to speak at my first school, and I mean, my first point of contact wasn't to message teachers because I had none. I didn't know what to do. So of course, I talked about this on a different podcast, Success Leaves Clues. Because you've done it, I messaged you. And when I messaged you, you know, you gave me a good brief rundown, which I still have on my Google Docs. I still save that. And you told me, one, to start with your why. Why are you doing this? Write down 20, 30, 100 reasons why, and really focus on that. So when I really understood that, I was just going, like, literally, where can I actually find teachers or build a rapport? Email my old school, email this, then I promise you, this is exactly how I got the engagement. I don't think I've ever told anybody this. They think that they get invited. Basically, I'm in a Telegram group chat for, it's called the Stock Pickers Academy group chat, right? For stock picking, for stocks. I literally, on a Saturday, they do something called Side Hustle Saturdays. You promote or plug your business. I didn't have one. I said, hey, I'm working on an exciting new project. I need a consultation of two or three teachers. If you're a teacher, let me know if this will be of interest. Then I got someone who replied to me, be like, oh yeah, I'm a teacher at this primary school, or I'm the head of year eight at this secondary school. I was like, wow, people actually responding. Like, so I was making up the plan as I go along. I'll be like, yes. They were like, what's your project? Can you have more deals? I was like, yeah. So I said, yes, I'm working on like a workshop or program to measure the ability of students pre-workshop and post-workshop, and looking at, like, just adding in a lot of different fancy words. And what actually happened is someone who replied to me said, oh, I have a friend. So now they're even referring me to somebody else. Now they referred me to that person, and that person turned out to be an English teacher and the head of year 10. And she was like, hey, let's have a chat. I'd love for you to come in, like, bring all your resources, speak to my year 10s. And that was it. the next week or so, I found myself in the assembly hall sharing my story about, you know, getting a scholarship to university, doing internships, about my grades, about everything. And to this day, I still have some of the students messaging me. And not to just like stroke my ego, but I'm saying they're messaging me because they need those common ingredients. How do you actually stay focused and revise for exams when there's TikTok about? Now there's so many different distractions. So I think it's powerful to just go out there and get it done. And the way to do that is to look at people who's doing it, ask questions, and things like that.
And there's something in that about how, like, because, you know, we live in a world, yeah, the internet makes the world seem very small. So what happens is you go and you say you want to do something, and because of the internet, you feel like there's bare people doing it. So you're like, no, it's a saturated market. I can't do it. And you might even get that feedback as well. But the reality of it is, the reason why those young people are messaging you back is because there isn't anyone else coming to their school to tell them that message. I went through my whole education system, and the only person that came into my school to do a motivational talk was an ex-prisoner. And he was selling his book. And it was the deadest talk I've ever experienced. But if that is what I experienced, how many more young people are going to go through the whole education system, not have no motivational speakers, no role models, no mentors? So it's like, you almost, I said this the other day, yeah, how like you have to believe that the purpose for your life is more important than people's opinions. Because people's opinions might always tell you that there's loads of people doing it, it's a saturated market, it's going to be really difficult to get into schools, and there's truth to that. But your truth and other people's truth are not the same.
Mm.
There's something there about being bold enough to say, regardless of what circumstance might be telling me, my faith in the vision that I have for my life is stronger than the current circumstance I'm living in. Because if I listened to, and similar to yourself, if you listen to a lot of people's opinions, you might actually stop. When actually, a lot of the time, it's not the smartest people that make it. It's actually the people who are the most resilient. How many no's are you willing to get to before you can get your foot in the door? And that's the thing that actually sees me. That's why your example was so incredible, because it's like, I was in a Telegram group, but you wouldn't be posting that message in a Telegram group if you hadn't been getting no via email, via phone calls. Do you know how many hours I spent doing cold calls to schools, calling schools up? So searching techniques on Google, on YouTube, being like, okay, how to do cold calls. All right, sit up straight. Make sure you say, you use this type of tone of voice. Make sure you speak in an assertive tone so it sounds like you know who you're asking for. All of those techniques. No after no after no after no. 6 years on, we've worked for over 6,000 young people. And now every day I wake up, there's a new teacher in my inbox saying, hey, can you come into my school?
So
we've got to have that resilience to just push through people's opinions.
No, that is powerful. And honestly, you said it perfectly in terms of the amount of things I was doing. Right, I was even looking at email tips and tricks, like Hacks 101, where you put in the subject line RE, then you put the semicolons to think they've already replied to you, but you're sending the email for the first time. Like, I was doing all sorts. And I think it's important. And now you're impacting 6,000 people. And it's not just something that's low scale, because you've been recognized, you know, by the Queen, right? You've been awarded a BME and for your services to disadvantaged young people. So talk to me about how that came along. How were you feeling? And was that like, was it a shock? Like, what was the ceremony like?
Yeah, man, I remember getting that email. My first thought was someone's pranking me. Literally, because the email came from, I think it said Her Royal Majesty or something like that. So my initial first thought was, I called my business partner. I was like, why are you playing games? She loves a prank. I was like, stop messing around. She looked bamboozled. I was like, bruv, stop playing games. She was like, what are you talking about? And I turned the camera around and I showed her. And she said, bro, that's not me. I was like, what? I called another one of my friends. I was like, yo, stop messing around, man. And she's like, that wasn't me, bro. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I checked the email just and I Googled it. I did my research. And then I realized, oh, right, like, this thing is real. And if I'm brutally honest, when I realized and it sunk in that I was being awarded a BEM from the Queen, it made me a little bit emotional, because there was this whole whirlwind of emotions. The initial one was imposter syndrome. I was like, how can I accept something from the Queen. Like, I'm not worthy for that. Like, the work that I do is not that deep. Surely that can't be for me. Then it was, rah, like, someone's actually noticing all this work that I've been putting in after all this time. And then it was, oh, I can't accept this. This is not about me. This is about the young people. This is about my team. How can I accept it? Why is my name on it and not my business partner, Aziz? There are so many emotions. And then I kind of settled into, and after a few conversations with people, it was like, yo, like, you deserve this.
Mm.
There's a reason why your name is there. And I think the real changing moment that really shifted things was when I actually read what I was being awarded for. So when I read it and it said, Carl, British Empire Medal for services to disadvantaged young people, that really shifted me. Because that in that moment, I was realizing that I was being recognized for purpose, not for profit, not for, oh, Carl, your name is amazing, not for, oh, you've made loads of money, but for the fact that you had been willing to serve disadvantaged young people during the pandemic. And that was like a reminder for me that purpose has to be at the front of all of this. Serving other people and the less fortunate and what they need, if that is at the forefront of what you do, then you don't need to worry about accolades. They will come as a byproduct, but just focus on serving those who need to be served.
Wow. And I think it says it already, right? This is the Valuable Podcast and you were recognized for the value that you provide. And we've already said it, value doesn't necessarily correlate to money in terms of financial gain.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So you were valued for your servanthood, mm-hmm. for the way you served the young people, for the way you served, not the young people, but your community in a sense, because I was even listening to a very, very powerful sermon and it talked about how every national worldwide problem started in a home.
Mm.
Right, it starts in a home, then if it comes out of the home, it avoids the community, right? It troubles the community. If it troubles the community, it can spread to other communities, it can spread to a nation, then it can spread globally.
Mm.
And I think the work that you're doing, you're literally tackling, you know, should I say, one, you're tackling inequalities in the community.
Yeah,
you're tackling low aspirations.
Yeah.
Right. You're tackling fear. You're tackling all of these things through the workshops and sort of programs that you provide. And what that's actually doing is preventing sort of like a spiral effect of, yeah. like you said, you've grew up what with gun crime and ex-convicts and all of these things. And that work is just being rewarded, rightly so, for the value that you're providing. And does that mean you made £1 million or £1 billion? I don't know.
Not yet, but soon come.
Not at all. We're not ruling that one out, but I just wanted to get it to the listeners that it is, and this is what I value, and these are the people, you know, that I want on the podcast, people like yourself that's just out there really doing, serving for the community, and without a doubt that you'll get rewarded. So
and I think that was like a huge lesson from last year and from the last few years, where I really felt as though God has really been speaking to me about the importance of character and purpose. Because when you're young, what happens is you grow and you got a lot of confidence. That's one thing I had. I had a lot of confidence. But what I've come to realize over time is that confidence without character will lead you in the wrong place. And you need to become someone who has integrity. I'll never forget, like, I used to work for a sports charity called Sported, and the CEO at the time was like one of the only other few black men at the organization, but he was also like a leader in his sector, and I was so excited to work for him. And after maybe like a year or so of working for him, he sat me down and he was like, Carl, like, you're an incredible young man, but I have to give you a very, very important piece of feedback. He was like, working with you has been like going to the zoo and seeing an incredible lion that is in a cage and has been sedated. And I was like, whoa, that hit me hard. And he was like, because when I was working with him, at the time, I was starting to really grow my desire for motivational speaking and creating content and all of that stuff. So what happened is the job became a bit of like a stopgap. I was just doing it for the meantime. The thing that I was really passionate about was my business and growing as a speaker and growing my personal brand. And that feedback was so important, because what he was trying to help me see, and he said this, he says, you have to realize that in life, the only way out is through. Sometimes we're in a situation where the current circumstance doesn't fit the shiny thing that we want to grow onto or what we want to become. What we do is we devalue the current circumstance. But what was really important for me at that time was that I needed to be a man of integrity and do my job. And that was actually going to help me grow as a better speaker. But sometimes what happens, especially with the internet, and this is something that especially your generation is going to be a big threat of, you get caught up in the shiny lights and you're like, I want to be the Eric Thomas now. I want to be this person now on a screen. But what happens is you don't realize that behind the screen, you need to become a person of substance. Mm. And substance comes from hours. Substance comes from not ego, but substance comes from servanthood. Substance comes from doing the things behind the scenes. And it's like sometimes we want to skip the process. And that feedback really stuck with me, because it really helped me see that even though I've got this special gift and even though I've got all this confidence, what's more important is character. And character is developed by looking after the food that is on your plate right now, not the dessert that you want to get to.
Mm. Wow. Sorry, I'm just processing this myself, you know. You know, you just need to process it yourself, because I can't let that fly over my head. Wow, so character is about substance, looking after the food that's on your plate in front of you, and not like the dessert or the shiny chocolate cake that somebody else is basically eating, because they've looked after their food. It's time for their dessert.
Exactly. That's a good word. That's a good word.
That is good. That is good. But I just wonder, so how, I mean, yeah, in that analogy, it can be a bit abstract to some, but if we're talking practically, in terms of practically, like, just look at your journey and your years, like, how does one now become that man of value or that woman of value? How do we get there? I've seen that you listen to a ton of audiobooks, I'm sure there's so much behind the scenes that we don't see. Maybe that's your routine, you're waking up. We know, okay, I know the wake up and worships in the mornings, but what's the secret power behind everything that's made you this man of value?
I think there's obviously quite a few different things, and a lot of them you probably already talk about on the podcast, and I know you already live from our relationship anyway. But I think one of the books that really started to shift things for me, well, the first book that I was ever given around personal development was when I was probably about 14 years old. And my old football manager gave me a book called The Stranger's Secret by Earl Nightingale. And at the time, I didn't really know what it meant. But I just remember the book kept on harping on about how if there's a group of 100 men, 90 of them probably won't reach their goals. And that principle alone was enough for me to be like, oh, okay, cool, there's something in this. And it talks about how the reason why 10 of them are most likely to reach their goals is because going after your goals is often a more difficult journey than just living a life that the world has given you. And there's a scripture in the Bible in Matthew 7:13 that talks about, it says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the way and broad is the path that leads to destruction, and many go by it. But narrow is the path that leads to life, and few find it. And what it basically speaks to there is that if you want to live a life of success, happiness, and joy, it means you need to enter by the narrow gate. It means you need to have discipline. You need to have direction. You can't go where everybody is going. It means you need to have clarity. And so I think that first thought being that if you want to grow and become a different person to the person that you were yesterday, you've got to live a different life to the life that you lived yesterday. That starts with your personal development. A book that really shifted things for me was a book called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. I recommend that to every single person that I speak to, because that really hones in on that principle of like you starting to develop a life of self-improvement and personal development. So that would be my first thing, like investing in yourself. I mean, the second thing that really started to shift things was vision. So when I was doing my A-levels, if somebody asked me what grades do I want to get by the end of the year, I would have just been like, I don't know. or I would have just said what I heard one of my teachers say. And that produced fudge. But when I was in university, because I had tasted failure, I had crystal clear clarity that I was not leaving that university without a first class degree. It was like someone had tattooed first under my eyelids. Every day I would wake up, that would be what I was thinking about. But that was because I had a drive behind it. I had a why. I had seen my mum's tears as a result of failing my A-levels. I needed to see her joy as a result of getting a first class degree. There was a driver behind it. So I think vision and clarity was super, super key. I always say to people, you can't hit a target that you can't see. So whether you're a student listening to this, go home, write down the grades that you want and stick them on the wall. Let that be the first thing that you see every day. But it's the same with people who run businesses or who has a career. What is the next job that you want? What is the dream life that you want to build? What do you want your family to look like? Where do you want to live? You literally can't hit a target that you can't see. So it's about also starting to have vision for where you want to go, who you want to be, and the life that you want to achieve. And then I think the final thing that I'd start to say that really started to shift things alongside personal development and also having a vision for your life is the people that you're around, man. There's that age-old quote that goes around every personal development book and podcast. You are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Laughing because you probably heard it loads of times, but you heard me say it all the time.
And no, but I don't think, like, when people repeat the same thing, I think that's a clue to, hey, you might want to believe this. Obviously, you can do your own research and scientific studies, etc. But it just goes to show if it's working for somebody, it can work for you. That's what I sort of, my sort of philosophy on a lot of the different things. But 100%. No, that's really good. And do you feel like sort of like women's had a great impact on your life? Because you mentioned your business partner is a woman, and I know that you're actually a twin, right?
Yeah, man.
So what's that like growing up as a twin? And
it means that I don't know what boredom is like as a child. I was always having a fun time, me and my sister. Yeah, man, being a twin is incredible, man. I was saying to someone the other day that my sister's name is Carla, so Carl and Carla. But that growing up with my sister, she's like, yeah, my heartbeat, man. Like we're really close. We're really fortunate because there's some twins who are not that close, but we're really fortunate. We grew up in a tight-knit household, me, my sister, and my mum. And so it meant that, like, I always say that the way to describe my household growing up was that there wasn't ever a day where there wasn't love in the household. And my mum had this incredible ability of not just saying I love you, but showing it, whether it be coming home to the warm cooked food, whether that be being involved in my education. My mum has a disability in her knee. And my mum will be on crutches, standing in the snow, watching me play football. And my mum will be on the bus, the minibus, listening to all of us sing the maddest songs with all the drunk dads as we're being driven home from an away match against Dover. So it's like, I think my mum's commitment to us as children was the love that she showed in our lives. And it meant that I was always going into the world full up. Even though the world might slap you around, when your household has love in it, someone used that analogy the other day where they said that, like, when you have a child, you've got to pour as much into their bucket as possible. Because as soon as they go out into the world is going to shake and rock that bucket so much. So if you don't pour enough in there, if they're going to get already half empty, they're going to finish their empty. You know. But if you've poured enough in there, when they go into the world and it knocks them around, they're obviously going to have enough in there. So that was blessed. And just going back to the first part of your question about women, and I did a TED talk about this, and it was called He Takes After Her. And it was how women and women leaders had such a big impact on me as a man. My first few mentors were women. Obviously, my mum had a dynamic impact on my life. I come from a patriarchal family where the head of our family is a woman, my grandma. Obviously, I got a twin sister. My business partner is now a woman. And I've always had really dynamic relationships with women around me. And that's really impacted the type of leader that I have become. As I've grown a bit older, I've started to gather a lot more male mentors as well, which I think is always natural and is really important for a man as well. And vice versa would be the same for a woman. But I think there's something really beautiful about the empathy and the emotional intelligence that I've gathered from being around a lot of women.
Yeah. And I can see it poured out. I can see you poured out. You are definitely, your cup has not run dry. your water is still in the bucket. And wow, that's even another powerful analogy that I'll be keeping in my back pocket, because I feel like this work, work, work. Yes, and I'm a true fan of sort of working. I'm a true fan of really, you know, chasing what you want at the end of the day. And obviously with integrity, with virtue. But you're very right in the sense that these setbacks, life can just knock you just like that.
Mm.
But the resilience, the how much you've got inside of you that can, you know, push you forward and sort of how you're anchored. And I know that you're very, very much anchored, a man of faith. You've mentioned God quite a few times on the podcast. So is that your main anchor? What's that relationship like?
Yeah, man, it's everything, man. It's everything, man. That relationship with Jesus Christ as a Christian really shifted things. I'm just going to be transparent for a second. I remember, and this is even after I'd started my business as well. I remember as much as I was trying to live purposefully, I remember trying to find my identity in different things. So at one point it was the business, and then the business went through a period where it wasn't making money, and then I was rocked. And then another point, it was my social status and how everyone would be like, oh, your videos are so sick. You're so amazing. You're such a great... that I love that wolf analogy. And then if the applause stops, then my identity was rocked. Then it was money. And then it was women and sex. And then it was going out and having fun. And after a while, what I started to realize is, rah, like, I'm just going around in circles here. If I've tried all of these things and none of them fill me up, surely there's got to be more to this. And I'll never forget the day when... because I grew up in a church. I grew up going to a Methodist church. But like most young men, you kind of get disengaged with it, especially when you start playing football on a Sunday and then now that's your excuse. And then you start meeting girls and all that stuff. And it's like, oh, the church thing is long. And so I was in the world running around, living my best life. And one of my cousins that I used to run around with, who did just as much badness as me, if not even more, he got saved and he gave his life to Christ. And I remember that was the first time I had a question mark on my head, because I was like, if you're better than me and you are giving your life to Christ, something ain't right. And then my sister got saved. And it was like everyone, it was like a domino effect. Everyone around me. And I was like, I was holding on because I was like, I'm not trying to follow them. They would invite me to church. I'm like, no, I'm not coming. I don't want to. And then I remember this day when I was particularly woke up and I felt such a strong burden. And I woke up and I felt like I had the world on my shoulders. And my sister walked past my room and she was like, oh, you should probably come to church today. I was like, oh, you know what? All right, cool. Let me just come. I went to church. When I got there, the pastor did an altar call. And I've never gone up for an altar call. And for anyone who doesn't know what an altar call is, it's basically when a pastor says, oh, if you're going through a specific issue or challenge, come to the front and let's pray for you. And I'd never been up for an altar call before. But on this day, I heard the pastor say, oh, if there are people who feel like they have the world on their shoulders and woke up with a burden, come to the front. And I was like, that's just too accurate. Like that speaks to my situation too much. I was like, let me just go up. And I went up and he was like, just speak. Like, God wants to hear from you. Just speak. And I remember praying and just saying, Lord, like, I just feel like, why does it feel like I've got the world on my shoulders and I feel so much anxiety and so much struggle and I've got so many questions to answer. And I heard an audible voice in my spirit that said, because you're not the one that's supposed to have the answers. You need to rest in me. And I was saying to my cousin, it was like I felt a bright light inside of me. And at that moment, I knew that whatever it was, I never wanted to lose that connection. I knew that I wanted to know Jesus Christ for myself in that very moment. And I went to my cousin. And I said, I don't know what this means, but I feel like I want to give my life to Christ. And I knew it was real when he started crying. He had tears in his eyes. And I was like, oh, I don't know what I've signed up to because this brother's looking like this is very serious. But yeah, everything kind of shifted from there because what it meant now was that, like, I realized that even with business success and awards and accolades and whether you find an amazing wife and have an incredible family, all of those things by God's grace are going to happen. But I never lose my anchor because I never lose Jesus Christ. And I never lose the fact that he died for my sins to be forgiven, which means I'm now going to experience eternity with him. But I don't have to wait to die to experience that. I get to live that every single day. And that wholeness and that peace, I've tried it. Tried it sleeping around. I've tried it making money. I've tried it social status. I've tried it posting YouTube, Instagram, everything. Nothing fills you up like Jesus. And nothing will contain you like the love of God. So yeah, man, when it comes to faith, that is the forefront and the everything.
Wow. It just reminds me of a scripture. He who strives for mastery is temperate in all things. And, you know, we strive for a crown that's incorruptible. Mm. And not corruptible, and I can sort of see, and I've never knew that before, and it's very deep in the facts, but it just shows the man, or it shows who you are, sort of behind what we see online and the business success, and I can get a greater understanding of where your value comes from. Mm. and everything you're doing serves a purpose. So really, really powerful. And just to quickly end off, sort of like 2022, is there anything in particular you feel like you're being called to at the moment, or what's the plans for the business? What's the plans for your personal life?
Right. First and foremost, before anything, Victor, I need the podcast people to know this, man. Listen, and look you dead in the eye when I say this. You, I love you and I'm proud of you. Ever since the very first day that I've met you, all you have been about is value. Value for others. Value for your peers, value in yourself. Literally, like, I'm sitting here, yeah, and I'm having to contain my excitement, because I feel like, you know, like when you're looking at a little brother and you're just seeing them grow into a man, and you're just like, this is such a superstar. But I don't even know if you see how much of a superstar you are, honestly, man. Everything you've ever done, everything you've ever stood for, it's just incredible, man. I'm so proud of you, and I just needed to let you know that, man. I really, really appreciate your hard work, your commitment, and everything you're growing into. So may the Lord continue to bless you and keep lifting you up higher, man.
Amen. Yeah. Thank you so much. I wasn't expecting that. Thank you.
But yeah, you asked me a question. What can people look forward to? I think first and foremost, and this is the first time I'm announcing this publicly, the first thing that people can look forward to is my very first book. Yes, I said it out loud. My very first book is going to come out by God's grace this year. The book is called From Failure to First Class. And
Ooh, okay, say that again.
The book is called From Failure to First Class. And yeah, man, it's my pride and joy, something I've been working on for way too long. And it's my opportunity to just, I love this. I love being able to speak, inspire, encourage, engage. And this podcast is going to reach thousands of people. And every time I do a workshop, I get to reach 30 people, 50 people. I was in a school yesterday actually, at 8:30 in the morning, delivering an assembly, 200 people, brilliant. But there are going to be so many other young men and women out there that I don't get to reach. And the book is just hopefully going to be an extension of that reach. So it's not just me telling my story. It's also me giving the practical advice on how people can go from failure to first class. And that's nothing to do with just education. That's to do with life. For me, everything that has our name on it is a direct correlation of the work that we put in. One day it's your grades, another day it's your paycheck, another day it's the mortgage or the rent that you pay, the family, everything that you do that has your name on it is a direct correlation of the person that you are. And after I failed my A-levels miserably, I promised to myself that anything that was going to have my name on it, I was going to be proud of. It doesn't mean I'm always going to win. It doesn't mean I'm always going to be successful. But what it means is I'm never going to have regrets. And I feel like what I've been able to do is write a book where people can take a formula and a manual for making sure that they live a life with no regrets. They live wholly, they live fully, they live purposefully, and they really become the best version of themselves. So one thing in 2022 you can look forward to is the book. Alongside that, I've taken a break from producing content and doing the videos. Like you said, you might not find me in cages anymore, but I'm definitely going to get back to doing a lot more content. And then with 2 to 3 degrees, I think there's so many different things, but I think the things that I would say that are key are 3 things. We do workshops and programs that really support and inspire young people. They have tangible outcomes. Young people get jobs. Young people get work experience. Young people get mentors. So my whole thing is, please, man, if you're a young person out there and you're looking for opportunities, just get in touch with 2 to 3 degrees. Don't sit there and be like, there's no opportunities, there's no jobs, there's no this, there's no that. I haven't got a network, I haven't got a community. That's literally the reason why we exist. So follow at 2_3degrees on Instagram, on Twitter, just 2 to 3 degrees on LinkedIn. Shed loads of opportunities, Eventbrite, so much on there. That's our workshops and programs. Alongside that, we also have something called the Connect platform. If you just go to www.2to3degrees.com, that's 2-3degrees.com, you'll find a Connect platform which gives you access to log into our backend system. And there's a whole bunch of jobs and opportunities that are on that system. So again, if you're looking for tangible stuff, the Connect platform has got that. And then we also have a consultancy arm as well, where we support other corporate organizations on how to get better at youth engagement. Obviously, with the 6,000 young people that we've worked with, we've developed an understanding of how to do this well. And we want to be able to support other organizations in being able to engage with diverse groups of young people as well. So those are the main things for this year, man. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. Wake Up and Worship every Tuesday on Instagram Live. I've got a discipleship group that meets on a Monday evening. I've got so many different things, but yeah, those are the main things to stay connected with.
No, listen, I will not add on no more. Otherwise, I'll be doing a disservice. But if you're listening, please connect in. And where can they personally find you if they want to find you?
Yeah, just Carl with a C and Conadu with a K. So that's Conadu and at Carl Conadu on everything, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm even on Clubhouse, everything. Carl Conadu, hit me up on Instagram, DM me if you've got any questions. I'm always happy to signpost and to help people out. So yeah, drop me a message.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Valuable Podcast. This has been a value-filled episode. I thank you so much, and I hope if you're listening, yeah, make sure to just get connected with Carl and show some love if you like this episode as well. All right, thank you, Carl.
Peace.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to give it a 5-star rating and leave a review. Alternatively, you can send us a DM on Instagram at Valuable Podcast and sign up to our newsletter at valuablepodcast.com. Remember, increase the value you provide and you'll rise in due time.